Greetings, and welcome to the Mobivity Holdings Corp. second quarter 2018 financial results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Charles Matthews, CFO. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, and welcome to Mobivity's second quarter and first half of 2018 financial results conference call. We appreciate your interest in our company. On the call today is Mobivity's Founder, Chairman, and CEO, Dennis Becker, and myself, Charles Matthews, CFO. Before we get started, I would like to call everyone's attention to our safe harbor policy. Please note that certain statements made on this call will be forward-looking statements, which are subject to considerable risks and uncertainties. We caution you that such statements reflect our best judgment based on factors currently known to us, and that the actual events or results could differ materially. Please refer to the documents we file from time to time with the SEC, in particular, our most recently filed quarterly report on file Form 10-Q and our annual report on Form 10-K. These documents contain and identify important risk factors and other information that may cause our actual results to differ from those contained in our forward-looking statements. Any forward-looking statements made during this call are being made as of today. If this call is replayed or reviewed after today, the information presented during the call may not contain current or accurate information. Except as required by law, we assume no obligation to update these forward-looking statements publicly or to update the reasons actual results could differ materially from those anticipated in the forward-looking statements, even if the new information becomes available in the future. Today's call may include non-GAAP financial measures, which require a reconciliation to the most directly comparable financial measures, which are calculated and presented in accordance with GAAP and can be found in this week's press release, which is also available at mobivity.com. I'd also like to remind everyone that we adopted the new revenue recognition accounting standard, otherwise referred to as ASC 606, as of January 1, 2018, on a modified retrospective basis. This means that results for reporting periods beginning on or after January 1, 2018, are presented under the new revenue recognition standard, while prior period amounts before January 1, 2018, are not adjusted. With that, I'll turn the call over to Dennis Becker. Dennis?
Thanks, Charles, and thanks everyone for joining us on our call today. Our second quarter ended in celebration as we executed our largest contract to date with our largest customer to expand globally. Despite signing on the last day of the quarter, we felt it was more appropriate to account for the associated revenues going forward into the third quarter and beyond. While this resulted in a sequential downturn of top-line revenues for the second quarter, we're now poised for a record-shattering third quarter as we project revenues to be between $5 million and $7 million. Recall that the new ASC 606 accounting standard will cause some lumpiness in our reported top-line revenues, but we feel that the contract values from our customer relationships are also more visible under the new accounting standards. Don't forget that our projected third quarter revenues have us on track to exceed the first 9 months of 2017's revenue by 60%-90%. Another highlight to the quarter was the successful raise of $6.8 million in financing through the sale of restricted common shares, essentially priced at market. The funds raised was in response to our customers' growing demand for Mobivity to play a more prominent role in their long-term strategic roadmap and thus operate a more robust balance sheet. Charles Matthews joined Mobivity as our new CFO during the second quarter and quickly architected the financing, which culminated in net dilution of just 4.5%. I'd now like to take a minute to elaborate a bit on the contract we executed on June 30th to expand internationally with one of our key clients. The agreement prescribes for thousands of deployments to Canada, Ireland, and the United Kingdom, all of which were well into launching, with some markets operating our receipt-based marketing solution. The contract also provides for additional revenue upside should other markets, such as Australia, Latin America, the Middle East, or Asia, decide to apply the services in the future. While we're excited to help our customers leverage targeted marketing on receipts to help their international business grow, we're even more excited for the ever-expanding value of the data we're collecting. With advancing fields such as artificial intelligence and machine learning, the increasing opinion is that data is the new oil, and thus our expanding reach to point-of-sale data is building a ton of strategic value beyond the financial outcomes of licensing fees. Given the high consumer frequency of quick-serve restaurant chains, where some consumers can visit as many as 5 to 10 times per month, Mobivity is accumulating a proprietary view into day-to-day commerce across the globe. Applying AI and other data science practices to the massive amount of data we're accumulating sets up an ongoing stream of innovation and revenue opportunities. Most importantly, access to point-of-sale data allows us to fully attribute the effect of our products and services on our customers' revenues and definitively prove our value. This was exemplified early on during the second quarter when we announced that Roundtable Pizza and Global Franchise Group, the owners and operators of more than 1,500 restaurant locations across 5 brands, expanded their contract to a 3-year term, including the rollout of Mobivity's full recurrency platform to all Roundtable Pizza locations nationwide. As previously reported, the owners and operators of selected Roundtable Pizza locations were the first to see the impact of Mobivity's recurrency platform on their business, with 75% of Roundtable consumers redeeming their first offer sent through Reach, the messaging and consumer outreach mechanism of the recurrency platform. The implementation of Mobivity's recurrency platform drove a greater than 40% increase in average customer spend, with over 1,000 participating Roundtable Pizza guests per location opting to receive text-based communications. An early trial brought approximately $100,000 in incremental revenue over just 6 weeks and set the stage for the expanded contract. Jeff Goodman, EVP of Roundtable Pizza, proclaimed that early trials of leveraging Mobivity's recurrency platform to increase guest frequency and spend wildly exceeded our expectations. Furthermore, the ability for Mobivity's recognition solution to deliver unparalleled insights through data has addressed the pressing need of assessing and improving other marketing channels. With clear visibility into data, coupled with personalized guest engagement, we're now operating our brand at a whole new level. Roundtable Pizza marked the beginning of our collaboration with Pepsi. While Pepsi serves as an important product partner to restaurant brands, the ability to leverage the data derived from our recurrency platform can help both Pepsi and the restaurant brand work smarter to shape consumer behavior and drive sales. We worked closely with Pepsi's sales force throughout the second quarter to train Pepsi reps on promoting and selling Mobivity's suite of solutions, and I'm pleased to report that several brands are progressing through our sales pipeline with new contracts expected to close here in the third quarter. In fact, we did sign another sandwich chain in the second quarter and hope to publicize their launch very soon. Our proprietary technology is also helping Google bring next-generation SMS messaging technology to billions of Android users worldwide. We worked with Subway and Google to execute a case study where we leveraged Google's Rich Communication Services, or RCS, to examine consumer purchase behavior. A typical SMS text message only contains 140 to 160 characters of text and is devoid of multimedia, such as images or video. RCS upgrades SMS by enabling multimedia and other features typically found in smartphone apps, such as buttons, maps, and even payment features. We wanted to see if leveraging multimedia and other advanced RCS features in a text message would result in better response and conversion rates to Subway marketing messages. Again, we're uniquely positioned to operate a test like this as we are in the entire workflow of sending the message to the consumer, seeing how they interact with the message, and then ultimately tracking the consumer to a specific Subway location and reporting not only if they made a purchase, but all of the basket level details of their purchase, like what specific sandwich did they buy? Did they add a drink or chips? How much did they spend? The trial delivered weekly offers to thousands of Subway guests using RCS in place of SMS. This trial showcased how Google RCS engages and drives customers to Subway more effectively than traditional channels. The results were extremely compelling. The initial test, which was a price promo offering 2-foot-long subs for $11.99, showed a staggering 140% higher conversion rate using RCS than standard SMS. I joined Subway's Chief Digital Officer, Carissa Ganelli, at this year's Mobile Marketing Association's Global CEO-CMO Summit in Sonoma, California, to present the results. The event included executives from all over the world gathering to share their knowledge to help define the future of mobile marketing. The case study results elicited a great response by the conference attendees, and we're planning to join Google at the upcoming Mobile World Congress Americas event in September to present additional case studies we're executing this quarter. Our collaboration with partners like Google and Pepsi, coupled with an increasing volume of publicized results delivered to key customers like Subway and Roundtable Pizza, is also dramatically collapsing our sales cycles. Keep in mind that our technology has only been operating commercially for just over 2 years, following Subway's inaugural launch in 2016. Up until now, we were typically relegated to lengthy sales cycles of 9 to 12 months that were then followed by another 3 to 6 month trial period before we could begin realizing revenues. We're now closing deals within 90 days of engagement, with most deals free from requiring trial periods prior to revenue recognition. The term length on our contracts, which have historically been 1 year or less, are also more commonly spanning 3 to 5 years, which is dramatically increasing our contract values and quality of revenues. Finally, I'd also like to talk about an important new product we launched in the second quarter. We found that once we start activating point-of-sale data in real time for our customers and prove material results to their business, we're learning about new opportunities where our proprietary technology can help drive material performance improvements for brands. One important topic for any operator is crew performance. A commonly known approach to improving crew performance is through employee engagement tactics. In fact, according to Towers Perrin Research, companies with engaged workers have 6% higher net profit margins. And according to Connexa Research, engaged companies have 5 times higher shareholder returns over 5 years. Our customers were informing us on the potential of providing real-time sales feedback to crew and staff so that performance visibility could be collapsed to minutes and seconds versus monthly or quarterly employee reviews, which often require hours of manual labor to prepare. We questioned where we could create a Fitbit for crew performance, where sales and other information derived from our real-time point-of-sale data feed could inform crew members to shape their behavior. The result was the development of our ReUp product. With ReUp, brands can monitor, measure, and reward employees by team, shift, location, or region to better service customers, partners, and the goals of the business. Gamification techniques help increase sales of important items by motivating employees with sales targets while showing real-time progress towards those goals, displayed on an easy-to-read tablet or monitor at each physical location. Again, it's analogous to a Fitbit, where employees are being fed real-time performance data on how they're tracking towards important goals. We're launching ReUp at select Roundtable Pizza and Subway locations, and demand from other brands is helping grow our sales pipeline. I look forward to reporting our progress as the solution enters the marketplace throughout the year. I will now turn the call over to Charles for a more detailed view of our financial results, and then I will come back for a few summary comments. Charles?
Thanks, Dennis. For the company's first half of 2018, total revenue under the new revenue standard, ASC 606, was $5 million, representing a 16% increase over first half of 2017 revenue of $4.4 million. This increase is primarily due to the impact of ASC 606, which represented an adjustment of $1.4 million during the 6 months ended June 30, 2018. As of June 30, 2018, we had $4.2 million in cash, an increase of $3.8 million compared to $460,000 at December 31, 2017. This increase was primarily attributable to a successful financing of $6.8 million that began during the second quarter and was concluded July 31st. The financing consisted of restricted common stock and resulted in reducing debt by $1 million and contributing $5.8 million of cash to the balance sheet. Additionally, the expiration of certain employee stock options and warrants during the quarter resulted in a net dilution from the financing of only 4.5%. During the first half of 2018, our outstanding stock options decreased by 1.9 million shares and our outstanding warrants decreased by 3 million shares. The decrease in outstanding warrants consisted of 2 million shares of warrants executed and 1 million expiring during the period. Deferred revenue for the first half of 2018 increased $819,000 to $2.2 million from December 31, 2017 balance of $1.4 million. Deferred revenue consists of payments received in advance of revenue recognition from customers and is recognized as the revenue recognition criteria are met. The increase in deferred revenue is due to receipts of prepayments from certain enterprise customers. The deferred revenue balance on our consolidated balance sheet does not represent the total contract value of annual or multi-year non-cancelable customer agreements. Comparing Q2 2018 to Q1 2018, revenue for the second quarter of 2018 was $1.4 million compared to $3.7 million in the first quarter of 2018. This change is primarily due to the recognition of $1.6 million of revenue related to ASC 606 recognized in the first quarter of 2018 and a reduction of $206,000 in the second quarter. In comparing the company's operational expenses in the second quarter of 2018 to the first quarter of 2018, we had significant improvements. During the second quarter of 2018, our total operating expenses decreased $2.3 million, or 53% compared to the first quarter of 2018. General administrative expenses decreased $477,000, or 38% during the second quarter of 2018 compared to the first quarter of 2018. This decrease includes an adjustment related to ASC 606 of $94,000 recognized in the first quarter. The decrease is primarily due to decreases in personnel costs, share-based compensation expense, and improved operational efficiencies. Sales and marketing expenses decreased $670,000, or 46%, during the second quarter of 2018 compared to the first quarter of 2018. The decrease is primarily due to decreases in personnel costs, share-based compensation expense, and improved operational efficiencies. Engineering, research, and development expenses decreased $1.1 million, or 72%, during the second quarter of 2018 compared to the first quarter of 2018. This decrease includes an adjustment related to ASC 606 of $842,000 recognized in the first quarter. The decrease also includes decreases in personnel costs and improved operational efficiencies. Comparing Q2 2018 to Q2 2017, revenue for the second quarter of 2018 decreased $872,000, or 39%, to $1.4 million compared to $2.2 million in the second quarter of 2017. The decrease in the second quarter included a reduction of revenue of $206,000 related to ASC 606. General administrative expenses decreased $75,000, or 9%, during the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. The decrease is primarily due to lower personnel costs. Sales and marketing expenses decreased $76,000, or 9%, during the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. The decrease was primarily due, again, to lower personnel costs. Engineering, research, and development expenses decreased $650,000 to 61% during the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. This decrease includes an adjustment related to ASC 606 of $92,000 during the period. The decrease was primarily due to decreases in personnel-related costs and higher software and development costs being capitalized. Operating loss for the second quarter of 2018 increased $226,000 to $1.5 million compared to $1.2 million in the same period of 2017. Net loss in the second quarter of 2018 was $1.6 million, or 4 cents per diluted share, compared to the net loss of $1.3 million, or 4 cents per diluted share in the first quarter of 2017. Comparing the first half of 2018 to the first half of 2017, revenues for the first half of 2018 increased $708,000, or 16%, to $5 million compared to $4.3 million in the first half of 2017. General administrative expenses increased $155,000, or 8%, during the first half of 2018 compared to 2017. This increase is primarily due to the adoption of ASC 606 during the first half of 2018. Sales and marketing expenses increased $418,000, or 23%, during the first half of 2018 compared to 2017. This increase was primarily due to higher personnel and commission costs. Engineering research and development expenses increased $54,000, or 3%, during the first half of 2018 compared to 2017. This increase includes an adjustment related to ASC 606 of $750,000 during the period. The increase was primarily due to a decrease in personnel-related costs offset by the expenses related to the adoption of ASC 606. Operating loss for the first half of 2018 was $2.9 million compared to $2.6 million in the same period of 2017. Net loss for the first half of 2018 was $3.1 million, or 8 cents per diluted share, compared to a net loss of $2.6 million, or 7 cents per diluted share in the first half of 2017. Net cash used in operating activities increased $1.8 million to $2.2 million in the first half of 2018, compared to cash used in operating activities of $368,000 in the same period in 2017. The decrease in cash used in operating activities was primarily due to the collections of prepayments on customer accounts and the impact of ASC 606 revenue recognized. Net cash provided by investing activities increased $6.1 million in the first half of 2018 compared to $61,000 provided in the same period of 2017. During the 6 months ended June 30, 2018, the company paid off the SVB loan and made payments on other notes representing $1.9 million. We borrowed $1 million in bridge financing, received $2.2 million from the exercise of warrants, and received $4 million related to our common stock offering. As of June 30, 2018, we had a cash balance of $4.2 million. With that, I would like to turn the call back over to Dennis for his closing remarks. Dennis?
Thanks, Charles. In summary, Q2 of this year marked several key achievements that we believe will be catalytic to accelerating future growth. We're stronger financially with a better balance sheet and lower operating costs. The value of our technology is becoming more visible to the market as world-class brands like Google rely on us for partnership activities, while highly reputable customers like Subway and Roundtable Pizza publicize the results we're driving for them. Our customers are expanding their contracts with us both in term and in fees, and our solutions are going global across major international markets. New solutions like ReUp are demonstrating the breadth of value our technology can deliver to the market. The size of our contracts could continue to induce fluctuations in our sequentially reported quarterly revenue. However, we expect our overall top-line revenue to reduce the magnitude of those fluctuations over time. We're looking ahead to a record-setting third quarter and are as excited as ever for the increasing momentum we're building in the marketplace. We appreciate your continued interest and look forward to sharing our ongoing progress with you.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Brian Kinstlinger with Alliance Global Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah. Hi, Dennis. With the incremental revenue from the expanded contract, can you break down between, say, one-time items such as license fees versus how much is recurring? And then also, with the increased scale, what are the gross margins? What does the change look like there?
With the new contract in particular that we signed at the end of the second quarter, the ASC 606 does kind of change or add some complexity to the term one-time revenue versus recurring. In other words, if we had a hypothetically a five-year $1 million a year contract, on a recurring basis, we'll receive $1 million a year in payments. Cash flows are recurring for 5 years from that customer. Depending on how much of the contract includes our customer premise installed software, which captures the information out of the point of sale, whatever portion that is of the overall contract value, being the 5 years multiplied by $1 million per year or $5 million, that might cause some of that revenue to be recognized upfront. I think that's an important delineation between kind of the former perspective on recurring revenue versus this kind of new perspective with the changes with ASC 606. For us, a good rule of thumb is that the around 30% to 50% of contract value will be related to the customer premise portion of the overall contract value or of the services delivered. We typically don't disclose specific contract details from our customers, but that's kind of a rule of thumb when looking at maybe some of the fluctuations sequentially of what ASC 606 is inducing in terms of revenues that are going to be recognized upfront and therefore not amortized over time. At the same time, the related cash flows and income is, quote unquote, all recurring.
Yep. So if I could characterize what you're saying, not just this contract in general, a good rule of thumb is the bump that you'll see from a quarter to the next, if it's because of one or two large contracts, half of that bump is going to be more looking like one time, and then in the preceding quarters, from a revenue recognition standpoint, you take that piece out and you still have half of that bump in the preceding quarters. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. The remaining portion will be amortized over the life of the contract. Lately, our retail starting point when proposing a contract to brands now is starts at 3 years. For example, this contract we signed at the end of January is for a 5-year commitment.
Got it.
Sorry,
okay.
The end of June. End of June.
As revenues expand, and your margins improve a little bit, how do you think about the financial strategy as, wins like Round Table Pizza and as you're trying to diversify away, obviously, from Subway, how do you think about deploying capital into sales and marketing to drive additional growth versus R&D?
Well, I think that highlights a couple of key developments for us this year is that our R&D expenditures went down quite a bit. 2017, we were kind of, and the latter half of 2016, coming off of a pretty highly scaled launch with Subway, and so there was a lot of continued product development. Going forward, a lot of that product development has matured, and now we're kind of, we're in monetization mode from all that work. So those R&D investments should stabilize to go down, particularly as a proportion of revenue. And then, secondly, with sales and marketing, we're pretty excited about the indirect channels that we are acquiring leads and deal flow from, namely our partnership with Pepsi and a few other partnerships that are developing that I can't name yet. But that's really bringing the market to us. So we aren't anticipating material increases in sales and marketing expenditures because the deal flow is mostly inbound, and the pre-selling and qualification of the deal flow is pretty high as well. So in other words, we don't need as much bandwidth on the sales side to process deals. So we don't expect any material increases in either of those areas.
And then finally, in terms of Roundtable Pizza, could you remind us how many stores they have? And I may have missed it. Is your technology going to be installed in each of them, and how long does that take? Or did you, I didn't quite get it all.
Right. So the last question, yes, our full product suite is installed in all of their locations. They have approximately 500 locations, predominantly on the West Coast. And then they are owned by Global Franchise Group, which owns another 1,000 or so locations across other brands that include Great American Cookies, Hot Dog on a Stick, Maggie Moo's Ice Cream, et cetera. And we're very confident that we'll be expanding beyond Roundtable, and you'll also see our product out in those other brands.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Brian Swift with Sutter Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Could you give us a little more color on what you're doing with Pepsi? You mentioned that you have a program going with them, and maybe kind of give us an idea of what kind of revenue targets you'd be, we should be expecting. I mean, I know they're not going to be Subway type things, but just kind of give us a little perspective of what to be looking for there and what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look around the restaurant space, it's really divided into two halves. You have the Coke half and you have the Pepsi half. So that gives you an idea of the addressable market. I think in terms of what we call national brands, so these would be brands like Pizza Hut or even Roundtable Pizza that have, dozens, hundreds, or even thousands of locations in multiple states and cities. I think Pepsi serves over 200 brands that fit that profile. These brands we like to think of in terms of revenue upside for the company, in the $500,000 to $3 million annual recurring revenue ballpark. So, our partnership with Pepsi is an important collaboration that, represents a huge part of the overall addressable market in the restaurant space, and our average contract values kind of speak for themselves in terms of describing what type of revenue upside we could get from this partnership. The partnership right now is just a collaboration where the Pepsi sales force is taking our solutions into their restaurant relationships. Once Pepsi procures a relationship with a restaurant brand, of course, after that, they want to see to it that as much Pepsi products are served and the volume levels are maximized through that brand's system. And historically, CPGs like Pepsi and Frito-Lay and Coke have provided additional marketing funding to help their clients maintain volumes. So in other words, Pepsi might do a deal with a Pizza Hut, and aside from the cost of the beverages and products that Pizza Hut will pay to Pepsi, Pepsi will also set aside some joint marketing funding so that when you're looking at menu boards or seeing ads for Pizza Hut, there'll be a Pepsi logo to help bring the Pepsi product visibility into that restaurant brand system. We're seeing Pepsi, along with other CPGs, increasingly pursue digital marketing solutions to invest that money in versus the traditional marketing channels such as print and radio and signage. That's really the nature of the partnership. Pepsi is now looking at how Mobivity can be a part of that marketing spend. So that when they go into these relationships, they kind of get the best of both worlds. Mobivity helps the restaurant brand perform better, but also Pepsi's joint marketing dollars for the brand have better efficacy in that, these text messages and targeted receipt ads and all of these other tactics that we can provide are also going to help drive Pepsi consumption volume.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you. Once again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. One moment, please, while we pull for more questions. There are no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the call back over to Mr. Matthews for any closing remarks.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on the call today and your interest in Mobivity. This concludes Mobivity's second quarter 2018 financial results conference call. Again, thank you very much.